Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, many of Shakespeare's stories were adaptations of real events or tales that already existed. The story of Romeo and Juliet, for instance, had been around in various forms for centuries. But perhaps another inspiration for the Bard was the real-life story of Heloise and Ebelard. Jim Burge is the author of Heloise and Ebelard, a new biography, and he joins us now in News Talk. Afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, I suppose a lot of what we know about them were from the letters that they wrote.
Exactly right, uniquely for that period. And we are talking about 900 years ago, so it's quite a time. And Europe's just recovering from the Dark Ages, if you like. They wrote a series of letters to each other. The first one is Abelard telling his life story, and the rest is a lot of conversation and interesting negotiating going on.
Yes.
So that's how we know, and that's almost certainly a unique thing for that period.
Part of the reason why these letters and other ones have been, as I understand, subsequently discovered was that Abelard was a very famous philosopher at the time. He was something of a big deal.
Yes, indeed he was. He was probably, in his heyday, the most famous philosopher in the world. And he was obviously very smart, pretty pugnacious, rowed with most of the people, had stand-up rows with St. Bernard of Clairvaux and other worthies of the period. But he was very good at his job and obviously very persuasive.
Yeah.
But,
was there a body or a school of thought for which he was well-known?
Well, there's a... There's one sort of emerging world of philosophy, and he's part of that in Paris as it begins, as I say, to recrudesce. What's interesting about that period in Paris is you could actually make a living as a philosopher by teaching it to rich kids. Now, that doesn't often happen in societies. Normally, philosophers have no source of income other than the state. But here you could, if you were famous enough, people would come along to be taught philosophy and they would pay you enough to live on, which I think is remarkable.
Right. So he's in Paris and he's making his living from teaching rich kids and he meets a very significant rich kid.
Yeah. He needs a place to stay. And he ends up staying in the house of a man called Fulbert, remember that name, who is a member of the cathedral school, another academic, if you like. He goes to stay there, and Fulbert has a beautiful daughter whose name is Heloise. Well, the inevitable happens. As Heloise wants to be taught philosophy, she's very keen on philosophy, as one or two women were at that period. And the perhaps inevitable happens during the lessons, as Abelard puts it, my hands began to stray more often to the curves of her body than to our books. And they started, by their own account, a pretty tempestuous physical affair, tiptoeing across the landing, too tired to lecture the next day because he'd been up all night, all that sort of thing. The inevitable two things happen after a little while. One, Heloise discovers she is pregnant, and two, Fulbert discovers what's been going on. Mm. So there's a sort of meltdown. And the men suggest, well, Abelard, why don't you marry the girl? And interestingly, Heloise comes back and says, no, I don't think that's a good idea, because being married will ruin your career, because you're taken more seriously if you're not married, and you don't want the pram in the hall, you don't want the problem of babies and things, you want to be a star philosopher. But what happens is Abelard sends her away to his home in Brittany to have the baby. The men force their position, and so they do get married, but in secret. And Heloise goes to stay with Uncle Fulbert while Abelard lives somewhere else. So it's a rather odd situation. We're not quite sure why that was negotiated, but this is when the bad thing happens. Something happened to distress Heloise in the house of her uncle. We can use a bit of pop psychology and suggest, well, maybe he made a pass at her, maybe he was obsessed with her, maybe something a little bit worse. But anyway, Abelard spirits her away, dressed as a nun, and sends her to her old school, which is a convent. Abelard goes back to his lodgings, and a couple of days later, it turns out that Fulbert is a vicious psychopath, because he and two guys come round in the middle of the night, break into his lodgings, hold him down, and castrate him. And in the chaos, Fulbert gets away, but the two thugs who are with him get caught, and in their turn, they are castrated and blinded. So it's sort of quite a lot worse than Reservoir Dogs, this story.
Right, yeah, Paris. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that escalated quickly, as people are fond of saying. Heloise, did she have the baby? What happened to the pregnancy?
Yes, she did. The baby, we know a little bit about his career. He goes on. They called him Astrolabe, which, as I'm sure you know, is a sort of medieval scientific instrument for measuring the stars. So it's a bit like calling your kid Large Hadron Collider. You know, something only a Parisian intellectual would do. But as far as we can see, Astrolabe had a pretty good career. And both parents stayed alive and stayed in touch with him.
Right, but both had repaired respective monasteries and remained there. So who brought up Astrolabe?
At that stage, neither of them were monks or nuns.
Yeah.
Abelard becomes a monk after that, and a 21st century person thinks, oh, yeah, well, that's appropriate. But actually, it's almost part of the career. Monks were posh in the 12th century, and Abelard was posh. He was the son of a lord. So you go into an order, rather like joining a prestigious accountancy firm or something. It's something you would put your career in. What's more interesting is that he insists that Heloise become a nun. And there are pretty clear indications from the letters that Heloise wasn't that keen on that. But in the end, she does what Abelard tells her. I think she liked that. But she also tells us that at the time when she's taking her vows, her friends are there still begging her not to do it, saying, you don't have to do this, Ellie. And so it's a sort of EastEnders moment, you know, they said, don't do it, Ellie. But she does it all the same, and then you get the drums. That's the setup for the letters. Abelard pursuing his philosophical career, Heloise, a nun. Now, again, she's posh. She gets on well. She gets her own convent, and she runs it extremely well. And there's an exchange of letters. Abelard tells us that he's writing an account of his misfortunes to cheer up a colleague, another monk, who is very depressed, and he's saying, well, look at my life, and you'll see that yours isn't so bad. Don't know about that, but he sends a copy to Heloise. And so the first letter is Abelard telling the story I just told. The second letter is Heloise's reply, and she begins by saying, what you must always do if you are married to a writer, she says, really nice letter, beautifully written, congratulations. Just a couple of things I disagree with. One, you say in your account that I am now a happy nun, enjoying myself. Well, actually, I'm not. I still love you. I'm still agonized by all this. And then she says something quite extraordinary. She says, it's so bad that even during communion, memories of the shameful pleasures we shared come back to me. Now, you imagine if you had a nun on your show, which I'm sure you've had at some stage, and you asked her, as a kind of, by the way, you know, what's the worst thing about taking holy orders? What's the most difficult, challenging thing for you? And she said, well, the problem is, Sean, that I can't stop thinking about sex during communion. Yes. I think it would be a news event, even now, wouldn't it? I mean,
yes. You'd
get the British press would be onto it, and they'd be sort of, the nun would be interviewed and probably disciplined. But yet 900 years ago, here is this woman clearly saying that. And not ashamed to say it, she still thinks she'll go to heaven. She's quite sort of calm about it. And she's working on Abelard to, as she says, get a balm, the soothing balm of friendship. She wants to reestablish, obviously not a physical, but certainly an emotional relationship with Abelard.
Yeah. And when did they become so famous as a couple?
Well, I think at the time, because, as I say, they were posh, and we think we know who her mother was, and I dare say people at the time knew what her father was. The story was all over. It was good gossip, what was going on. After that, the letters are quite soon after copied and published, and you can see that it's a time when people begin to become interested in friendship and love and romance. The story of Tristan and Isolde, another love story, dates and becomes popular at that time. So it just caught the wave, and very soon it spread. And so it was known about quite soon. Within 80 to 100 years, everybody knew that story and other things.
Yeah. But given at the time, it was, I suppose it was great scandal for people was there a process by which it was romanticized, notwithstanding the somewhat gory details in some of it?
It gets referred to as a romantic thing, the romantic ideal, and Heloise backs that up. She's a romantic. She wants to recapture that love. She wants to sort of reel Abelard in to a certain extent. Now, we only have these letters, which are written in quite a short time, but there are indications that she made it. She got Abelard to write a series of hymns for her convent. And you don't do that without talking to the abbess and probably the nuns as well. So it's it sounds as if there was a romantic reunion at the end, but we can only guess at that.
Yeah.
As for the reception, yes, the story has been current ever since then, and people and so in the 1930s, somebody wrote a book. Helen Waddell wrote a novel about it, which people of a certain age have all read and love. So they've never really been out of fashion since that time, but because of the gory detail, I expect.
Yeah, but as you said, he wrote hymns for, but did they ever physically meet again, do you know?
Hard to say, it's not mentioned. I would say yes, because in one of the letters, she's very upset that you have been ignoring me. And I can sort of imagine more easily that was a physical thing. They were at some ceremony together or something, and he cut her dead. He just couldn't stand talking to her. You can understand his point of view. It's very shameful what happened to him. He's sort of wrecked and maybe just wants to put it away from him. But Eloise is stronger. Eloise doesn't. She wants to keep on going. So I think they met, probably when he was writing the hymns, they must have met, but we don't have any evidence for that. So tantalizingly, we have this, suddenly the spotlight falls on a very interesting part of the story, but either side of it is dark. And so that leaves us to speculate. And that, I think, is part of the romance of Abelard and Eloise. You hope it turned out well, but you don't know.
Jim, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Jim Burge there. He's the author of Heloise and Abelard, a new biography.
Moncrief on News Talk.